Hi, this is the Unnamed Trucker from the Road Gunner Podcast, and you're listening to my good friend Bob Main on the Handgun World Podcast. Take it away, Bob.
Hi folks, I'm Bob Main, and welcome to another episode of your weekly Handgun World Podcast, a practical show done by a practical guy. That's me. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Well, 350 episodes, how about that? Thank you very much for listening to me for that long. It's quite humbling, I gotta tell you. So this episode, I'm gonna talk a little bit about shooting eyesight. And Grant Cunningham wrote a really good article recently about shooting eyesight, what happens when our eyes get a little older. If this doesn't pertain to you, if you're a younger person, just wait. One of these days it's going to pertain to you. If you're someone like me, 54 years old or older, you know that your shooting changes as your eyesight changes. And I want to cover a real good article about what to do about that that Grant Cunningham wrote and a couple of other things that I've seen out there. So that's going to be a lot of fun once I get into that. There's been some listener feedback and listener voicemails recently that have come to me. And so let's start with the first listener voicemail, because this is about terminology and it's pretty good. I like it. Let's listen.
Hi, Bob. This is Jim in Dallas. And I wanted to talk to you and your fans for a minute about terminology and the power of words. We know that the anti-gun politicians and anti-gun members of the news media like to throw around phrases like assault rifles and high-capacity magazines, and we know the power that those words have over people, even though they're used erroneously. So I want to pick up on another phrase that I've heard you use from time to time, and that is gun-free zones. We all know what that means, but it's really, the irony, of course, is that it's not a gun-free zone. It's just a zone where only criminals will have guns. I like to think of them as safe criminal zones or safe criminal havens. So I would encourage you and all of your listeners to be very careful in how we use these phrases, and especially avoid the use of gun-free zone, because it conveys absolutely the opposite of what it means. Thanks for your podcast, and keep up the good work.
Well, Jim, thanks for the voicemail. You are correct. And, you know, every once in a while I get a voicemail that really makes a really good point because the person really thought it out and had a real good coherent argument. And, you know, this is one of them, Jim. Thanks very much. That's why I wanted to put this on the show for everybody to hear. Yeah, gun-free zones. It's not really a gun-free zone, is it? So I promise I am going to no longer use that term. Jim's term's pretty good. I would say it's probably a criminal hunting zone, don't you think? I think maybe I'll probably start saying something like that. Or I'll come up with something else. But it's where criminals can go do their hunting, because it's the law-abiding citizens. We all know it's the law-abiding citizens that don't have guns in a gun-free zone. I've said it again, in a criminal hunting zone. And whenever a business, matter of fact, we're going to talk about that a little bit more in this episode. Whenever a business posts no guns or legally posts it, they create a criminal hunting zone or something like that. So, very good, Jim. I appreciate that. We all know that it is not truly a zone where there's no guns. We know, even though maybe the business owners don't realize it or are just too ignorant to understand it, that the bad guys are not going to obey that sign. Think about it. Can you imagine this? Bad guy walks up, wants to rob a business, sees in Texas the 30-06 or the 30-07 sign, or sees a no-gun sign, and says, "Oh, I guess I can't go in there. I can't go in there and rob the place and shoot people up. There's a sign here." So I guess that sign is going to deter me. I'm a bad guy. But no, we all know the bad guy knows that he's not going to get shot at. So it is a criminal hunting zone, and thank you very much, Jim. Words do mean things. I appreciate you very much bringing that up to me. All right. Now, let's talk about an email that I received. I'm not going to use last names, but I am going to use first names here. An email I recently got from a gentleman named William. Now, I'm going to paraphrase his email here, and then I am going to let you decide. Because every once in a while, I get emails from people, and when I read them, it's confusing. It's confusing because I'm really trying to wrap my brain around exactly what it is that they're saying. William wrote to me and said, "I couldn't believe when I heard you using the 'blood will run in the streets' argument." Wow. He thought I've used the argument, "blood's going to run in the streets"? He says, because I said private citizens carrying guns is bad. Well, first of all, I never said that. And he said to me, he said, "just listened to the podcast where you talked about the new action pistol competition. You were referring to something someone said about people carrying guns without training, and that was bad. You seemed to agree in that you repeated the statement." Well, William, no, I don't agree. Okay, I did say, and you guys are going to be able to hear it here in a few minutes, I did say that it's a bad idea to carry a gun without training. But that's all I said. And I didn't agree with the guy just because I repeated the statement. Hey, William, I had to tell the listeners what my friend said. Because I was repeating what my friend said doesn't mean that I agree with it. It just means I had to tell people what it was that he said. I had to make the point first that he was trying to make so that I could talk a little bit about it. William said, "I agree that getting training is a very good idea, but not getting training is not bad." Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. I am going to replay for you the episode and the excerpt that William is referring to. Here it is. This is from episode 346. Now, you listen and you decide. William, in his email, says that I used the "blood will run in the streets" argument and that I seem to agree that carrying a gun without training is bad. So here you go. You listen to it. You decide. Recently, I was talking to a coworker of mine that it probably is not as pro-gun as I am in terms of citizens carrying guns. And he said something that was interesting. He said, "A concern I have, Bob, is the people that are walking around carrying guns and they don't have any training." In other words, and he said they don't have any military or law enforcement training. And, of course, I wasn't going to go there. I wasn't going to, you know, talk about how many military, ex-military, and law enforcement people come through my training classes that I've taught or that I've been involved in, because a lot of them do, right? A lot of them don't get the kind of training that the ordinary citizen thinks that law enforcement and military get. No offense. No offense to my brothers and sisters in law enforcement. No offense to my brothers and sisters that are either active duty military or in or ex-military. But a lot of you with handguns don't get the kind of training with handguns that people think that you do. You know, the military spends a lot of time using rifles, but from what I understand, talking to a lot of military men and women that come back, they don't, they say they didn't get a whole lot of training with handguns. And, you know, law enforcement with hit ratios of 20%, I kind of scratch my head if they're hitting 20 or 25 or even, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say 30 to 35% hit ratio. How much training do you really think that they're actually getting? You know, the law enforcement people that only show up to qualify, what is it, once every 6 months or something like that, and that's the only shooting that they ever do? Yeah, a lot of them are that way. Now, not all my brothers and sisters that are in law enforcement. Okay. And by the way, most of you know, I'm not ex-law enforcement. I'm not ex-military. I'm not an ex-gunsmith or anything like that. Okay, but so I say brothers and sisters because, hey, we're brothers and sisters in Christ, and that's the way I talk about it, all right? But what I am trying to point out is that a lot of them only show up to the range a couple times a year, and that's it, because they have to do that to qualify. And that's all they ever shoot. They don't go to competition matches, they don't take training classes and things like that. But anyway, he said, my coworker said, I'm concerned about other people walking around with guns that have no training. You know, I got to say, it's a valid concern. It's a valid concern, and it's something I've been talking about a long time. It's not something new that I've expressed a concern about. Now, you know, please don't get on me. Please don't start hammering me like I've been hammered in the past. But, Bob, training should not be required to carry a gun because it's our Second Amendment right. Okay, you're right, folks. You're right. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and concede. You are correct. I just think it's a super bad, bad idea to carry a gun without getting at least some basic safety training. How about that? In other words, proving that you can handle your gun safely. And when I mean handle your gun safely, I mean know how to carry it safely. Know how to draw it and fire a couple of shots on target safely. Less than a couple of seconds. And not put your finger on the trigger. And not have an accidental discharge or negligent discharge. That's what I'm talking about. And making the four rules of gun safety reflexive and being able to move and then draw and get out of the line of fire. You know, basic stuff like that, and prove that you can do it safely. All right, that people should, it's a bad, bad idea to walk around carrying any kind of a gun without that kind of training. Would you agree with me on that simple premise? I hope so, or that simple tenet. Okay, is that the blood in the streets argument? I mean, yeah, I repeated a couple times that I thought it was a bad, bad idea, and I still do. I think it's a bad idea. I just don't think it's very smart. And here's one of the reasons why I think it's a bad idea. Don't you want to prevail if you have to use your gun to protect yourself? Don't you want to win? And I hate to tell you that if you've never been to a training class, you might not have all the tools that you need or might not know all the techniques that you need to know to be able to win that fight. So it's not just a bad idea from a safety standpoint, because I still think it is. I still think that there are a lot of unsafe people. Not everybody. Okay, I'm going to say not everybody, but there are still some unsafe people, irresponsible people. And I think if we could get them some safety training, that would improve things, at least for those people. But really, it's a bad idea if you don't know how to win the fight. So, William, I'm not sure where you're coming from here with this email. I don't use the blood in the streets argument. Matter of fact, I was recently making fun of that argument on Facebook recently because here it is, a couple of days, it's like the 4th or 5th of January by the time this podcast releases, and open carry is legal in Texas now, and we haven't had any blood in the streets. The streets are totally dry right now. There's a lot of 30-07 signs up. I've seen two of them already in just this short time. 30-07, which is banning open carry on their premise. So they're starting to make it a criminal hunting zone. And when I say a criminal hunting zone, I mean a zone where criminals can go do their hunting on good people and not be deterred. Of course, concealed carry is still okay. If they've posted the 30-07 sign here in Texas banning open carry, concealed carry is okay. Anyway, I'm not sure where this blood in the streets argument comes from, so I would love to get some more clarification. Or if any of you know what William's talking about, and maybe you can point it out to me, that'd be great. Maybe an episode number and a minute where I said, you know, a range of a couple minutes or something where I used that kind of an argument, that would be great. I would appreciate that. But I think here's what I promised. I promised that I would play for you what I said and let you decide. But William, thank you for the email. Again, I never mind emails that are even critical. I don't mind that as long as you can make a really good point. And I'm not sure, William, if you accomplished that. But again, I always, always welcome feedback. Now, here's another head scratcher that I got. This came from Kenneth in Arizona recently, from Ken. He goes by Ken in Phoenix, Arizona. He says, an old guy who rather likes our competition. Now, this one here, this is really a head-scratcher here. Here's what Ken said to me in the email. He said, whenever I hear someone say a business has the right to set up gun-free zones, and I'm using that terminology now because Ken did in his email. He says, whenever he hears that a business has a right to deny him his civil rights, or whenever he hears someone say that he doesn't have a right to go into a business or could go elsewhere, he says, I am brought back to my youth in the 50s and 60s when a private business could refuse to serve me because I am a Negro or colored. He said, I don't have to drink from that fountain. I don't have to use that lunch counter. I don't have to ride on the bus. He says he has visions of George Wallace standing on the schoolhouse steps, and a school cannot deny him his civil rights. Okay, and he says, this applies to whether I'm colored or concealed carrying. A civil right is a civil right. Ken says, substitute the word colored for concealed carry, and isn't it the same thing? He thinks it is. So then Ken finishes his email to me saying, please tell me again your thoughts on why it's different. Now, I don't believe that I ever did say that it's different. I understand, Ken, your point. I understand what you're saying. See, here's the thing. I mean, if your skin color, if you're African American person, you were born that way. You can't help the fact that you were born with a different skin color than other people. To me, it means nothing. I'm colorblind. It means absolutely nothing. Okay. And yes, it was wrong for years and years and years and years for businesses to deny service to people because of their skin color. Here's the thing. Carrying a gun is a choice you make. It's a right you have, but it is a choice that you make. And when you make the choice to exercise your right to carry a gun, you have to also understand that, in my opinion, a business has a right to preserve their property rights and say that you can't carry when you're on their establishment or in their establishment, in their building, because even though, and you're going to hear the audio clip from my recent episode, even though I said I don't agree that a business should have the right to deny you one of your civil rights, even though you'll hear me say that I think it's a bad thing, Ken, I'm not quite sure why you're asking me to please tell you again why I think it's different. You know, the Founding Fathers wrote that we are all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among those are the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If someone tries to deny you your life and your liberty and your pursuit of happiness because of your skin color, wrong. Okay? Because that's the way you were born. Now, if someone tries to deny you the ability to carry a gun and deny your ability to do that and your right to do that, well, you weren't born that way. Yes, you were born with the right to self-defense. Okay, but you do make a choice when you choose to carry a gun. Because a lot of people choose not to carry, and that's their right to choose not to carry. And as I mentioned before, in a different episode, the Constitution protects your right to self-defense and to carry, your Second Amendment right, but what it's meant to do is to limit the federal government's power and to not allow the federal government to take that right away from you. I don't think that it's the same thing. I think it is. Well, okay, Ken, here's what I say. And here's what I'm saying to you. I guess it boils down to whether you think that property rights should be as important as a person's civil right. I don't think that it's a good thing that a property owner has the right to deny any citizen a civil right. Okay? I'm going to go ahead and say that. I don't believe that that is a good thing. But I'm pretty sure, if I'm not mistaken, somebody wants to correct me, it's the law of the land. We don't have a perfect system. But it's the way it is. Again, I'm going to go ahead and play the voice clip from one of my previous episodes. You decide.
Thank you so much for everything you do. I was just wondering if every sign you encountered everywhere you needed to be was like a 30-06 or a 30-07, would you carry everywhere had signs like that? Would you keep your gun in your car always, or would you go ahead and say, my Second Amendment rights supersede their signs? Thank you very much, and God bless you and your families. And you guys have a fantastic podcast. I look forward to it always. Thank you. Bye.
Andrew, once again, thanks for the video and thanks for the question. Towards the end there, you asked if we thought that our Second Amendment rights would supersede a property's right to post a no guns, the proper no gun sign, and create a gun-free zone. You know, I do not believe that it would. I do not believe that our Second Amendment rights, because I don't think that they would trump their property rights. It's about property rights, and people do have property rights, and they have the right to create a gun-free zone in their building if they are the owner or the manager of that building. It doesn't mean it's right, but it doesn't mean it's the correct thing to do. It doesn't mean that I agree with it. Matter of fact, I don't like it. I don't like the fact that a property owner has the ability to deny my Second Amendment rights when I'm on his property. But you know what? I'm not obligated to go on his property. I can choose to go somewhere else. The only problem I have with it, and I've said this many times, Andrew, in many other episodes, I do have a problem with a business that is employing the general public. In other words, they're employing people that are coming from the general public. It's not a, it's not an extremely private, dwelling. I'm not talking about a place like a person's household. Okay, that's an extremely private dwelling, typically restricted to only family members. But, you know, you take a large employer, for example, or really any employer that are creating jobs and employing the public. Now what you're telling people is you're going to say, if you make your business a gun-free zone, here's what the business owner's really saying. Okay? Stay with me on this. The business owner's really saying you don't have a Second Amendment constitutionally protected right, sir or ma'am. You don't have that right anymore when you're on my property. Now think about this. These are rights that are so-called protected by the Constitution. However, the Constitution, it limits the federal government. What it really does is it limits what the federal government can and cannot do. So basically the Second Amendment is saying, you can't, hey, federal government, you can't take the gun rights away from individuals. But a piece of property is not the federal government, is it? So that's why a piece of property of the owner of a building or a piece of property, because they're not the federal government, that's why they can, yeah, in effect, deny your Second Amendment rights. But if you're employing people, you're telling people you have to get a different job if you want to carry your gun. I just think that's a little over the top. I really do. I really think that that's a little over the top. Just my personal opinion. I know what a lot of you are thinking. Bob, it doesn't matter if you think it's over the top. They have a property owner right to deny your Second Amendment gun carrying rights. And yeah, by the letter of the law, that's true. Does it make it a good thing? No. But you know what? We don't have a perfect system. Okay. Well, I played it for you. You decide. Ken from Phoenix, thanks for the email. Thanks for the feedback. As I say, folks, I read every email that I get. And most of them don't make the show. But sometimes somebody sends something to me or points out something to me that I have to talk about. And this was one of them. I welcome your comments. My voicemail number is 210-646-1727, 210-646-1727, or bob@handgunworld.com if you want to email me, bob@handgunworld.com. Or even go on the Handgun World podcast Facebook page. I do start a Facebook post for every episode. Go there and put your comments there. A lot of people read that. Just search Handgun World Podcast or Facebook.com/Handgun World Podcast. I'm also Handgun World on Twitter. Quick break and I'll get into shooting eyesight.
It was one of the worst mass murders committed by a single person. It happened down south. A lunatic killed 27 people, including his own mother, in a single pass. The killer used a six-shot revolver and a knife. Mass murderers find whatever tools they need, and those tools don't need to be sporting rifles or high-capacity clips. A slow, reloading revolver is all this fellow needed. Banning clips will not prevent a madman's massacre, but that doesn't matter to the gun control industry, who thinks inanimate objects are evil, but ignore the deranged people who misuse them. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
I need to put a little segment here in the show to go ahead and make an announcement that I have decided to travel to Houston a couple of times this year to work together with Ben and teach a couple classes. Houston's a short trip. I can make that. It doesn't require me to be away from my family too long. February 20th, Saturday, February 20th, for those of you who have never taken our Beyond Concealed Carry class that Ben and I teach, it's already about a third full. And we've just had it posted up there for a couple of weeks. So get signed up for that if you've never taken our one-day Beyond Concealed Carry. We start about 8:30. We finish up about 5:30. We might have a little bit of low-light shooting as a bonus afterwards. I'm not going to guarantee that, but it's pretty likely. So if you can spend the whole day and part of the evening with us, you're going to like that. February 20th. In the Houston area, you can sign up at handgunworld.com. And then we're teaching our two-day advanced class. And just Ben and I are going to be teaching this one, Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced. If you're one of our graduates, or if you've graduated from another training class, or if you've taken another really good class or bona fide class that from a decent, reputable trainer, come learn some next level techniques from Ben and I, April 16th and 17th in Houston. Also, that's a 2-day class, and that is also at handgunworld.com. Remember, if you're a Shooters Club member, you get 15% off of these classes. Ben is also teaching out in South Carolina. I can't remember the exact date, but I'm going to get that. He's also got a Beyond Concealed Carry coming up in San Antonio that he's going to be instructing by himself. Go to his website. He's got both of those posted, modernselfprotection.com, modernselfprotection.com. So South Carolina and San Antonio, also Ben's going to be traveling to teach Beyond Concealed Carry. But I'd love to see you in Houston at one of those classes. And we are working on putting together an Alaska class. That's another one that I'll travel for. I'm not going to miss the chance to go to Alaska if we get that put together. So that may happen in late June. However, you know, John Payne's also going to be probably putting on a red dot pistol class that I really need to make. And I really want to go to that. John Payne from Suarez International is probably going to be putting on a red dot pistol class, and I'm going to be most likely investing real soon in a complete Suarez International slide with a Trijicon RMR on it. Got a chance to play around with one of those the other day. Whew, they are sweet. I've always known they're sweet. I have shot them before. It's been a while. Kind of ignored it for a while, and now Yeah, it's the way to go, folks. It's the future of handgunning. It really is. A Trijicon RMR. There are other red dots out there right now. Trijicon's probably the best right now. So I'm going to probably be picking up pretty soon a Suarez International Slide, one of their match grade barrels, and a red dot, a Trijicon RMR. I'm just trying to decide basically which RMR to go with. Once I figure that out, then I'll be placing that order. So I really want to take John Payne's Red Dot Pistol School coming up. I don't think he's got it posted up yet, but for those of you that are interested in that, you want to join me and meet me over there, there's a likelihood I'm going to be there. Of course, I'm going to take a Tom Givens class in Baton Rouge in March. I'm pretty sure that's March 19th and 20th. And I'll be over in Baton Rouge, Louisiana for that. Anyway, come join us at one of our classes as well. Thanks for allowing me to do this announcement.
Good afternoon. This is your captain speaking with just a little flight information. Coming up on the left, we're going to be catching a glimpse of the Grand Canyon. On the right, you can be able to see the Hoover Dam in just a few minutes. We're flying at an altitude of 37,000 feet, and our airspeed is 400 miles an hour. Couple little facts here. I'm packing a Colt King Cobra. That's a 357 caliber firearm with a black rubber grip and a 6-inch barrel. Also, the co-pilot is carrying a Kimber custom defense pistol with all the bells and whistles you'd expect from a custom gun of that kind, with an alloy frame and bevel treatment on the entire gun. And our chief flight attendant, Roger, has a Ruger Bearcat 22 with a hand-fluted cylinder. All three are capable of piercing body armor at a distance of up to 27 feet, and it can put a hole in human bone and flesh the size of the Grand Canyon, which, by the way, is coming up on the left-hand side of the plane, so just sit back and relax and enjoy the rest of the flight.
Okay. Grant Cunningham recently, I found this on usconcealedcarry.com, but Grant Cunningham recently wrote a decent article about shooting with old eyes and things like that. And I'm going to cover that. I want to say, first of all, thank you to all of you who became a member of our Shooters Club. And we were very happy to give away the XDS 9mm pistol. And you know, I was counting all the videos the other day. 47 videos and 10 audio podcasts. 57 podcasts of good information, both video and audio. Exclusive material. Wow, Ben Branham just did a really good one on terrorism. I just put some stuff up there that we were teaching on striking a person and then shooting them. And I just did a real good holster video and all that. And even a video on one-handed shooting while you have another arm wounded. There's some stuff on the Shooters Club about that too. So $8 a month or $75 a year, you can take advantage of watching good videos. It's not a substitute for training, folks. It's not a substitute for training, but you can really reinforce a lot of what you already know, or you can learn about some new things that you want to practice in your next trip at the range. So check that out. Go to handgunworld.com, the Shooters Club page, or just go to shootersclubmembers.com. Okay, eyesight. You know, Grant made a good point here in this article, and basically he said that his inability to focus on his sights was a serious impediment when he got older. And he said, you know, a lot of us are trained and we're taught and we start to believe that you can't make a good hit on the target with your handgun if you can't see a sharp sight picture. That's what we're told. That's what a lot of us are taught. And Grant makes a really good point. He says, you know, that might not necessarily be true. You just have to retrain the way that you shoot. And I want to share a little bit of this article with you. He said his next idea was to use bifocals, and they were, after all, designed to bring close things into focus. And it just, you know, the distance was in focus, and of course the bifocals help you read up close. And he said optically they worked fine. He was able to get his front sight in focus, but there was a bigger problem in that it affected his stance. I have glasses like that where they're progressives. And yeah, you got to tilt your head back to be able to see through the bifocal portion of your lenses. And that, yeah, that can affect your shooting stance and mess things up. And, you know, a lot of us, we're trained to lean forward. And when you're leaning forward and you're looking through the distance portion of your lenses, your glasses, you then, you know, your target's in nice sharp focus, but you've got blurry sights. And the best part of Grant's article here is where he says, throwing away the book. Let me share some of this with you. And you can read this whole article. I'm going to go ahead and link to it in the show notes. But Grant wrote, when you think about it, there are only two items in a sight picture. Okay? The sights and the target. And that's true. Having them both out of focus wasn't working, and having the sights in focus wasn't an option. So how about if I put the target into focus? And he said, I'd proven that when something was in focus, I could hit accurately, and when nothing was in focus, I couldn't. The logical conclusion was that something needed to be in focus, and the only thing left was the target. Now, he said this is not a new concept. There are a number of shooting systems that utilize a sharply focused target and fuzzy sights. I'll say that again. There are other shooting systems that utilize a sharply focused target and fuzzy sights. From Brian Enos' competition method, and Lou Chiodo's target focus system at LAPD, to the combat focus system of Rob Pincus. They use the technique to shoot faster. Okay? So, Grant says he tried it for himself. He set up a standard IDPA target, focused simply on a spot on the target, aligned his sights as best as he could, and fired. And he was shocked that the holes appeared on the target. Now, I'm going to stop right here and throw a little bit of myself into this and say, I have this same problem. I got this same problem. Recently, my prescription changed, and my sights are fuzzy. And I started to figure some of this out by accident because, you know, it used to be my sights were perfectly in focus, but I could never see the targets if they were more than about 5 yards away. I couldn't see details. I remember shooting IDPA matches, and I couldn't even see some of the pieces of tape that were covering up the holes on the target from other shooters. And even if I was shooting at a clean target, I couldn't see the little lines on the target. I couldn't see the lines or the perforations or whatever you call it there. And when I got different glasses and different contacts, now everything on the target is in focus. I can see the pieces of tape. I can see the lines. And I would imagine if it's a bad guy, I can probably see the buttons on his shirt or the zipper on his jacket if it was a longer distance shot. Now, my sights are blurry, but I can still line my sights up. Even though they're blurry, don't think that you can't line them up. Okay? They may be a little bit fuzzy, but the more you practice looking at those fuzzy sights, the better off you're going to be. As a matter of fact, if you're inside of 5 yards, those fuzzy sights aren't going to make much of a difference anyway. Because if you're using combat shooting or point shooting techniques or instinctive shooting or whatever name you want to give this, target focus shooting as Brian Enos called it, whatever name that you want to give this, your eyes are going to see what they need to see. They're going to see what they need to see. The sights are going to be a decent indicator of where you're pointing that gun and where your round is going to go. Even if it's a long distance shot. One of the cool things about having my eyes corrected nicely so that distance targets are in focus, one of the cool things is if I'm trying to make a 35 or 40 yard shot, I can now see the target. I couldn't see the target before at 25 or 30 yards, 35 yards. And forget about it with a rifle. If I was shooting at a 50 yard shot and I didn't have any magnification on my scope, forget it. I couldn't see it. Now all the targets are in focus. So Grant wrote in the article, as Brian Enos described in his book, Practical Shooting, the idea is to look through the sights rather than at them. Now, if you remember back in the early days of my podcast, when I was interviewing Steve Zofi from the Power Factor Show, Steve's an excellent USPSA shooter, we dedicated quite a few episodes to Brian Enos' book, Practical Shooting. Excuse me. You can go back and you can listen to some of the older episodes of my podcast. You have to do it off the website, handgunworld.com. You have to go back and you can stream it off of the website because the iTunes feed doesn't have all the really older ones. But you can, it's great. You can easily listen to them as long as you have internet access. It's really easy to do. And we talked a lot, Steve and I talked a lot about practical shooting. And this is probably the most profound part of the whole article. where Brian Enos described it as this. The idea is to look through the sights rather than at them. And it's true. I look through the sights and I see this nice, crisp, sharp, focus target. But the fuzzy outlines of the sights are there. But if you properly align those fuzzy outlines, if you align the fuzzy outlines of the sights, just like we were all taught when we took marksmanship, you just impose them, you just superimpose them on the target. You just kind of plop those fuzzy sights on the nice target that's in focus and press the trigger. And a good trigger press, and even if the sights are not perfectly clear, your bullet will go where you need to, where it needs to go. Now, I have noticed, personally, some sights are better than others. Speed sights are great. I've gone back to using speed sights on my Glocks. You know, it's a shame that speed sights are not more popular. I thought they were going to be a little bit too busy at first, but not really. The diamond concept really helps you line things up. I don't get distracted by the rear sight. And the nice big bright green or bright orange diamond sight in the front. What I really like about it is, first of all, even with my corrective glasses on, it's relatively in focus. I can use the top of the diamond, the pointy top of the diamond and the rear sight diamonds. I can make precision shots. So if I'm going to be shooting at 25 or 30 yards, I can do that. Or Trigicon HDs, those work good too. I got another gun with Trigicon HDs, and with a big bright orange front. And even though there are tritium vials in the rear, what's nice is the rear looks mainly black. The rear sight looks mainly black, and so that big orange front sight just jumps right out. Green seems to be working better for me. Green's better than orange for me and my eyesight. So, you know, if I've got some kind of a fiber optic or some kind of a brightly painted front sight in green or a bright orange color, and I have rear sights that don't distract me much, that bring my eye to the front sight, it's not that bad. Yeah, they're a little bit fuzzy, and maybe one of these days I might black out the white diamonds on the speed sight rear sights. I'm not quite sure. They haven't been distracting me much. But I'm thinking about blacking them out. I'm going to take a chance because I'm going to, you know, that's permanent. I can't, reverse it. But I'm thinking about blacking out the rear and see how that works for me. Not the part that's tritium. I still want the night sight ability, but that way maybe it might bring a little bit sharper focus. But let me tell you, I have not had any problem finding the front sight. And I've shot two competitive matches recently, two competition matches with my G19. And the speed sights did just fine. Shot IDPA recently and placed 9th out of 41 shooters. I was second in the CCP division, but I'm not going to brag about being second when there were only 3 shooters in CCP, a compact carry pistol. But overall, there were 41 shooters in the match, and my overall time was 9th place overall. With a G19, 4th gen G19, And the grip work that I've had done to it and speed sights. So, I'll take... Oh, wait a minute. No, you know what? I shot that with my stock 3rd gen G19. That's right. I shot IDPA with my stock 3rd gen G19. Even with stock Glock sights. Yeah, those crappy sights everybody talks about. You know what? For someone with bad eyesight, the white outline of the rear sight and the big white front dots, not that bad. It's not that really all that bad, you know. I mean, I'll probably end up replacing those. I'll probably put some kind of a fiber optic on that one, and some regular black sights. See how that works. Another thing that's not bad is put like a green or an orange fiber optic on the front and leave the Glock white outline rear sights on the pistol. They're plastic. That's one of the problems, is they're plastic. So for one-handed gun manipulations, it's not that great. You could break the sights when you're trying to chamber around, so and things like that, or clear a malfunction one-handed. So that's one of the big problems with them. But you know what? It's not the gun, folks. It's the person shooting the gun. That's really what it is. It's the person shooting the gun. So in finishing this up, part of Grant's article here says, "Teaching an old dog." And I really like this, where he says, changing my long-standing presentation technique wasn't terribly difficult, but the hardest part of the transition, he's talking about the transition to his new eyesight, has been breaking old habits. Yeah, old habits are hard to break. He said, the hardest thing has been forcing myself not to focus on my sights. How about that? Wow, what a new idea, huh? Regular draw practice, making sure that I look at the target only, has been helpful in overcoming these old habits. The results speak for themselves. I'm shooting more accurately and a lot faster, and I'm again confident in my ability to deal with a lethal threat. So, you know, Grant, nice article. Nice article. You know, I've always respected Grant. I've listened to him. I've heard him on other podcasts and so forth a lot. And I've heard him interviewed several times and read a lot of his work. And maybe I'll get Grant on the show one day. Maybe we'll even talk more about this subject. But I urge you to go to handgunworld.com. Find the show notes for this episode. This is episode 350. Thank you, by the way, folks, for listening to me 350 times. Wow. Find the show notes, episode 350, and read the article, Shooting with Old Eyes. It's a good article, and Grant did a good job with it. And you know what? This was a timely article, because I have been struggling with this when I first got my new glasses and new contacts recently. By the way, I had LASIK surgery back in 1999, and I hate to give you folks with LASIK surgery some bad news, but I'm going to go ahead and give you some bad news. If you were relatively young when you got it, like me, when you get older, your vision will worsen. I'm sorry. Sorry to tell you that. And the doctors won't tell you that. Matter of fact, the doctors may tell you the opposite. They may say, oh, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's going to stay with you forever. Not usually. The LASIK surgery does not normally stay with you forever. Now, my eyes are a lot better than they were before I got surgery. Absolutely. Matter of fact, many times I don't even need my glasses. I really don't. A lot of times I don't need glasses or contacts. I can see pretty good without them. Probably like about 2035 or 2040. And that's pretty decent, you know, when I'm just kind of, you know, hanging around the house or something like that. But if I'm driving, of course, glasses go on or contacts go on, so I can see distance at 20/20. And I use my progressive glasses, which I really like, because I can see middle distance and I can see up close and I can see distance. Nice. But, you know, the thing is, folks, I hate to tell you about that, but LASIK surgery, it will improve your eyes and it'll improve your vision, but it's not going to be permanent. When you hit your 50s, mid-50s, or 60s, and I'm just speaking from experience here, folks, guess what? Yeah, your vision's going to worsen a little bit. But practice focusing on the target and just superimposing those sights on the target. Looking through the sights, don't worry, don't freak out because they're not perfectly in focus. And stop thinking that, you know, just because they're not in focus, you can't make a hit. Because you can, and I have been recently, and I'm going to keep practicing this. I'm going to a practice session here in a couple of days. And this is mainly what I'm going to be practicing for about a couple hundred rounds coming up in a day or two, is placing the fuzzy sights on the target. And I'm going to try several different types of sights because I've got, you know, different types of sights on different guns. And I'm going to, once and for all, pretty soon settle on which sight system is going to work, even though they're a little bit fuzzy. And, of course, learn how to point shoot. Put that tool in your bag, in your arsenal. Learn how to do that. And when you're inside of 5, even 7 yards, those sights are not going to be all that important to you because you're going to learn how to make decent hits. Fight-stopping hits without having to see a perfect or any sight picture whatsoever. Okay? Come to a class. We'll teach you how to do that. All right, quick break, and I'll be right back.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to my dad on the Handgun World Podcast. Why does he carry a gun? Because he can't carry a cop.
Well, that's it, folks. Happy New Year. Hopefully you're having a good start to 2016. And keep praying for me. I got a lot of cancer screen tests coming up the week of the 19th of January. I've got 4 major tests to verify whether my cancer is still gone. And so keep praying for me so that I can remain cancer-free. The Lord is the great healer and the great physician, so keep sending up prayers for me so that I can continue to keep doing this, keep doing my job, keep taking care of my family, just keep being a decent citizen like I want to be, and of course, a great servant for the Lord. That's my goal. So without that, without saying anything more, folks, thank you for tuning in to another episode of your Weekly Handgun World Podcast. I'm Bob Main. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. And evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll catch you next week. Goodbye.